At the end of the day, travel for me is still a very in-person experience that delights. Nothing can take away that. No matter what kind of technology you implement, nothing can take away from that wonder and excitement. So in our space, it's really about saying these tools exist, but how can we use them in a responsible way without taking away that concept of delight and wonder?
Welcome to Brave. Learn from Southeast Asia's best tech leaders. Build the future, learn from our past, and stay human in between. No BS on success. I'm Jeremy Au, venture capitalist, serial founder, Harvard MBA, science fiction nerd, and dad of two daughters. Every week, we debate startup news, interview changemakers, answer listener questions, and share personal insights. Join our movement of over 40,000 members and get transcripts, resources, and community at www.bravesea.com. Stay well and stay brave.
HD Mall is a healthcare marketplace in Southeast Asia connecting patients to over 1,800 medical providers. This covers multiple categories such as dental, aesthetics, and elective surgeries. Over 300,000 patients have accessed more affordable healthcare via HD Mall. Get yourself a well-deserved health checkup. If you're in Thailand, go to hdmall.co.th. If you're in Indonesia, go to hdmall.id.
Hey, Amir, really excited to have you on the show. You are shining the light on something that I still don't understand, really. So can't wait for you to explain to me what's going on here.
No, looking forward to doing that.
On that note, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name's Amir. I'm a Singaporean co-founder and co-founder of a company called U2. That's U-T-U. Have a nice day, U2. And what we're really about is adding value to the tax-free shopping experience, giving tourists more of their refund value back in a way that works for them. In summary, that's the 30-second pitch.
So before we start about that, like why and how was your early career like?
So I studied in Singapore, I was born in Singapore, did my NS. Right after NS, I went to the US for undergrad. And towards the end of my undergrad, I was given two job opportunities. One was at Google and one was at Morgan Stanley. I turned both down because my dad was pretty unwell at the time. So I wanted to come back home. But my dad's also a workaholic. So even though he was unwell, he ended up doing a deal in the tax-free shopping space. So actually my first role was working with him in the tax-free shopping space as a salesman. So I used to go to Little India and actually help merchants there, textile merchants, to set up tax-free shopping services in their stores. And I think that's really like where you get the guts of entrepreneurship is through that, you know, experience on the streets. And that still holds really true to me today. Thereafter, I went back to the US for my master's. And towards the end of my master's, I was kind of thinking, okay, what do I want to do now? And my dad and I was, you know, powwowing ideas across the table. And we said, you know, why don't we start a company together looking at the cross-border rewards and loyalty space? So we didn't actually start looking in the tax-free space. We were looking at how you take a point that you've earned in Singapore, a loyalty point you've earned in Singapore, and use it, say, in Thailand. Because, for example, your Starbucks star you earn in Singapore can't be used anywhere else. So we were trying to solve for that problem, which we managed to do so. And that led us to this insight that there's actually three types of rewards. There's payment rewards, which is, you know, shop with your DBS card, you get DBS points. There's merchant rewards, which is come to Starbucks, I give you a Starbucks star. But there's also a third kind of reward, which governments are saying, come and shop in my country and I'll give you a reward back by way of a VAT refund. In Singapore, we call it GST. So if I say VAT, I generally mean both VAT and GST. So come and shop in our country and we'll give you a reward by way of a VAT refund. So what we did was we took this idea of the traditional tax-free business model, essentially reversed it into a rewards methodology. And that's sort of what we do today.
So let's get into that, right? So I am a person and I'm traveling to the UK, right? And I'm visiting my sister for a month. Yeah. This is university. And then I hang out there for 1 month and then I come back. So What am I missing here? What am I supposed to be doing during this time? How does VAT or, you know, the value added tax or the GST apply to my life?
Okay, sure. So let's maybe switch it to Paris. You're taking the Eurostar because right now the UK, they're deliberating bringing it back. They actually took it out during COVID, the VAT refund scheme. So let's say you're in Paris, you're buying a backpack, right? And I'm just going to use easy numbers for the audience. So backpack is 500 euros. VAT rate is about 20%. So the government is saying, Jeremy, you can get back 100 euros, but you have to go through the VAT refund process with the private operators that the store appoints. Okay, so out of that 100 euros of VAT paid, you can probably expect to reasonably get back about 65 euros. Okay, so...
Whoa, hold up. I lost you there.
So I understand a part about buying an expensive backpack in Paris, the one I get.
Okay.
And I get the fact that the government texts me $100, so I see it in a receipt all the time. And then I'm supposed to, well, I've never done this before, so I guess I'm just a sucker. Again, I don't buy that much stuff. But so, and then what we're saying is that I have to go to somebody that they appoint. What does it mean to go to somebody appoint? It's like a portal they give?
No, so the brand, let's say you're shopping at Brand X, would contract with a VAT refund operator, which is another private company that handles the administration of the VAT refund between the shop and the government. Okay, so that tends to be two main companies in this space, both of which my dad actually had involvement in. So we know the space really well. So these refund companies are the ones that will help you to process your refund at the airport. Okay, so once you buy
only get $65 instead of $100? I thought I paid $100.
So the government is saying, Jeremy, you can get back 100 euros, but the processing fees in this industry can be quite high. As you can imagine, there's a lot of coordination between the refund operator and their various constituents. So the processing fees can be quite high. And generally what we're finding is tourists are getting about 65 euros back as a refund. And that's okay.
Because I deserve all $100 back. This whole point of refund. I don't know. Wire transfers is like, you know, a dollar, right? So wait, how does this work? Explain. How does it get from, you know, I don't know, online digital seamless refunds to a $35 haircut?
So we're talking about really in-person experiences, right? So you got to get yourself to Paris. You got to be buying that bag. But essentially, there's about 15 different friction elements in that transaction that the refund operators have to navigate. So what's ended up happening is because of the scale of the business, because of the number of people that they have to work with, because of the intensity, it's a very paper-based process. So because of the intensity of the paper-based process that they have, the transaction fees have gone sort of the other way, which is to go higher rather than go lower. And I understand the stones under the VAT refund operator's feet because, you know, there is customs to deal with. There's government and Ministry of Finance to deal with. There's retailers to deal with. Then there's putting back that money onto tourist payment cards. So as a result, you end up with this pretty high transaction fee. And what we said to ourselves is that, okay, that's 35 euros of deadweight loss, essentially. And that 65 euros is money that is leaving the shop where you bought your bag. And it's leaving the country. It's being taken back home to Singapore by you. So what we said is, all right, if these guys do what they do, which is to refund VAT, can we figure out a way to build products on top of that infrastructure that do a few things, give more back to the tourist and incentivize them to shop more, which is what governments want you to do? Can I help retailers to sell more? Can I help money that was leaving the country to be recycled within? And can I even help the VAT refund operator guys to say, look, rather than just managing the transaction on the bag, maybe I can give Jeremy an incentive to upsize the refund that he was getting in cash into value, which he can use again to shop on a accompanying wallet that matches the bag. So can I increase the tourist basket size? So my story is not a disruption story. Typically, you know, if you think about disruption, you're always taking somebody else's lunch at some point. My story is really to say, I've got a pie and the pie is about this big. Can I take this big pie and increase it for everybody?
And so if I get $100, I'm supposed to So if I get, if I'm entitled to $100 and $35 going to processing, so are you saying that the 35 shrinks as a result of this dead weight loss because of UTU, or does that mean that the $65 becomes more
The 65 euros becomes more valuable, and it can become more valuable in a few ways. One, I can say, Jeremy, look, instead of getting 65 euros cash, I'll give you 90 euros worth of airline miles in any one of the 12 airlines that we work with. Right. Or I can say to you, Jeremy, hey, you're in the store right now, right? Rather than 65 cash refund, I'm going to give you 120 euros of value if you buy the wallet that goes with the bag. So it's really about, remember, taking that rewards concept and the concept of giving more back to the traveler to incentivize them to shop more and make them feel like they're not suffering that burden of the 35 euros that gets taken in the processing fees. And what we do is we are not getting involved in the VAT refund process. We're really building products on top of that infrastructure. So we see, for example, VAT refund operators, and we understand the onerous process they have to go through. We even see them as our partners. So as I said, we're not looking to take anybody else's lunch. We're just simply looking to add value to all stakeholders in the tax-free shopping journey.
Yeah, I guess what we're saying here is the government's intention inadvertently is not intending to refund you $100. It's net refund is 65 euros.
So I would tweak that a little bit. The government's intention is to refund the 100 euros.
Yeah.
But because of the process in place today, the tourist ends up getting less because there's a lot of different stakeholders involved in processing that single transaction.
Okay, so I get it. So, you know, what we're kind of saying here is we can't really change what's happening to the $35 because the current system's in play. The players are there. They're comfortable taking their processing costs and so forth. Let's figure out how to rebundle the 65 back into at least $100 worth of value. from the consumer's perspective, creating more value for a dollar. Interesting. So how does somebody, you know, like I said, traditional process is, and I've seen those VAT counters, right? It's like, go your shopping, you have your bags, you go to the VAT counter in the airline, at least at the airport. What is that process like for those who haven't done it yet?
So for example, let's say that you're shopping in Greece as an example, right? You're buying something from a store. The store will issue you a VAT refund form from their preferred VAT refund operator. You take that form to the airport whenever you depart. Okay, you go to customs and customs will inspect the goods that you're essentially taking out of the country. So the concept around VAT refunding is you're essentially turning the individual tourist into an individual exporter. So customs will assess the goods, make sure that it's in your bag and it's going to be checked in. They'll stamp your form. Okay, then what you're going to do is you're going to go to the relevant VAT refund counter of each of the operators. So let's say there's two operators, for example, and you've got one form from each. You'd first line up at operator A, process your refund. Then you'd go to operator B, process your refund. Then finally, you'd check in your bag and you'd be done with the process as, you know, right after that. So it is in a little bit of a way manual. And there's a few reasons for that. Again, sorry, this has gone into a very technical podcast.
Oh, I want to hear all the reasons because that sounds like a total pain in the rear. And it also reminds me why I've actually honestly never done it in my life because I'm just like, you know, I mean, I see everybody filling forms. I'm just like, you know what? I got to get to my airline. So why is it taking so long? Why does it take so many forms?
Well, what's complicated here is you see on a typical Europe trip, let's say, you know, you're a Singaporean traveler traveling to Europe. You're not just perhaps visiting Milan. You might also be going to Paris. You might also be going to Vienna, right? So people tend to make a trip and go to say one, two, three different countries on this big European trip. It's expensive to go on these kinds of holidays, right? So people want to make the most out of it. Now, the VAT refund system in each country differs greatly. Some systems are more digital, some are government tendered, some are single operator, VAT rates differ, the structure of the processing fees differ by country as well. So for example, in the UAE, tourists by law are getting 87% of the refund back. In Europe, it's a free market, right? In Singapore, the government has also mandated a minimum GST refund that goes to tourists. So to navigate cross-border becomes very difficult. And that's why you have those paper forms. If you're buying something in Greece, as we were saying, and then you're visiting Milan and you're going back from Milan to Singapore, there needs to be some way for the Milanese customs, because you're leaving the EU via Milan, they need to be able to verify that form has come from another EU member nation. So it can get very technical from that perspective. And that's why innovation is also a little tough in this industry.
So how does you two change this process? Does it make it easier? Because it feels like a Google form, you know, or Airtable form, you know, feels like at least I could, you know, like if I'm taking, you know, because I don't want to be filling out that form right at the airport. I want to be, I don't know, the night before or whatever. But the week before, I guess, I'm fitting it out. How does YouTube help this process?
Okay, so I wouldn't say we make it drastically easier. But what our thesis is, there's two general complaints in the tax refund world. One is the lines at the airport are really long, which I believe that the existing incumbents who are in the space, I think they'll sort that out through digitization at some point. So let's park that to one side. But the second complaint I get is that, oh, why am I getting only a percentage of the VAT paid as a refund? Yeah. And that's really what we're trying to solve. So we are not looking to disrupt the operation of the VAT refund operator. They've had pre-existing relationships with their retailers for years, and we don't want to touch that, right? We want to be respectful of that. But what we're saying is, can we work with the same retailer who is still issuing the VAT refund form from their preferred operator? Can we work with that same retailer to introduce products in the store that add more value to the user? So for example, YouTube privileges. If you go back to that example I was saying where you're getting 65 euros back as a refund, I'm going to give you 120 to keep shopping again in the store. That's a very merchant-driven product in store that harnesses the value of the VAT refund you would have otherwise received at the airport to drive an additional sale in the store. So it's a very much in-store experience. You still have to go through the regular VAT refund system with the incumbents at the airport. But our thesis is that if we can drive that value, and it's not a small amount of value, it's almost double the amount that you would otherwise get in cash, right? We think that people are okay going through this extra step of using YouTube services because of the quantum of that value.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, why aren't you solving both of those problems, right? Because it feels like for me, for example, as I look at a line, I'm just like, you know, and I'm off, right? And firstly, to some extent, maybe that's a feature, not a bug, because I guess effectively I subsidized the local government with the tax. So there's a nice headline message of a refund, but, you know, the net tax rate is higher because I'm not actually submitting the refund forms. So I'm just kind of curious what your thinking is about why not tackle both problems.
So the way I look at the tax refund process today, it's a very administrative system, similar to money changing, right? It's a very methodical, it's been in place for ages. And there are startups that were looking to disrupt that space. And indeed, we were looking at doing that as well. Yeah. It wasn't that we weren't looking at doing that. But the realization for us came that there's so much value that is leaving countries by way of VAT refunds being brought back home. And then we understood one more thing in that the tax-free guys and the retail guys don't fully understand the stone under each person's foot. And as a company with you two, my dad's my co-founder, as I mentioned earlier, he actually came from a retail background. So his first professional job on his own when he was an entrepreneur was actually running the perfumes concession at Changi Airport. And this was many years ago. This was like in the 90s when I was a young boy. And so he understood the famous P's of promotion, price, placement, the stuff that you learn in business school. So he really understood what retail meant. And he saw this ability to link retail with tax-free, which has not been really seen before. So what we decided to do was not go by the way of revolution of the industry. We decided to go by way of evolution to say that, look, the VAT refund guys do what they do, which is process tax refunds, and they do it to the best of their ability. We do what we do, which is to give back as much more as possible to the customer to help drive or help give more back value to the customer, to help drive incremental value for all stakeholders involved. So as I said, help shops to sell more, refund operators to process more, keep money that was leaving the country to be recycled within.
Right. And so, you know, walk me through that process. So for example, I walk into a retailer that now works with U2. Yeah. I see, you know, the U2 app. I can download it. I can sign up for, I guess, a U2 account. So how does that workflow? And then eventually I go back to the airport to do my VAT tax refund, but how does it go back into U2 and how do I get it out?
Yeah, sure. So take one of our brands, Cucinelli or La Martina in Milan, right? So you'd walk in, let's just go back to that 500 euro bag that we were talking about earlier. So what's going to happen is the sales staff is going to say, oh, do you know, Mr. Jeremy, you know, you're a tourist here. You've been a very good tourist. I'm really happy you bought this bag. But do you know on this bag, you're getting a 65 euro refund. We're going to give you 120 euros of value. There's a really lovely wallet that goes with this bag. And you're going to say, how much is the wallet? And they're going to say, oh, it's 200 euros. You just have to top up another 80. And you're going to say, how do I do that? And so they're going to say, look, we have this product called U2 Privileges, right? You just have to receive this U2 privilege in the U2 app. And what we ask you to do as a tourist is we ask you to pay the 65 euro refund that you are going to receive at the airport for that value of 120 euros. Right. And that 65 euros is what you're going to claim back from the airport with the existing VAT refund operator. So the workflow is really walk into a store. There's this sales ceremony, right? The store that works with us sees value in increasing the basket size, selling more to the tourist. Yeah. The tourist makes a decision to recycle the VAT refund they were otherwise going to receive at the airport into the tourist privilege. Then they give you the VAT refund form as per normal. You go to the airport, you process the refund as per normal. And then you depart back to Singapore. So again, we're not. I do recognize that this isn't making things easier in the sense that there is that added step. But my thesis is that the value that we're giving you is much higher.
Right. So how much more value are we getting out of the system as a result?
Again, so this is very much dependent on the countries. So in Italy, for example, average refund is 65 approximately. Right. And we're giving you 120 of value to continue shopping. Right. In the UAE, by law, you're getting 87% of a refund. We're giving you 110 to continue shopping. So 87 dirhams goes to 110. Singapore is about the same as the UAE. So again, it differs. But what I think the main thing is we've been able to get over and above 100% of the VAT paid. We're able to offer you more than that. And I think that is tremendously more valuable for the tourist shopper who isn't that mood of shopping and spending and wants to get value from their purchases overseas. So again, this is really where knowledge of the local industry and the mechanics of each refund system comes in very handy. And that's really the retail side. But say you don't want to shop more in the store, you can always upsize your refund that you are getting in the form of airline miles. And as mentioned earlier, we work with 12 airline partners and one hotel partner.
Right. Are there specific corridors or types of, you know, people or routes that really people are like, wow, this makes total sense for me? I don't know, in my head, is it like the Dubai, Italy corridor, for example? Like what kind of corridor really makes sense?
Well, this is a very interesting question because it changes so often based on, you know, how currencies are doing, etc. Like, you know, for example, in December, this past December, I've seen so many of my friends from Singapore travel to Japan for a holiday. Why? Because, the yen is competitive for Singaporeans today. Right. So it's changing constantly, but I think we do have some fixtures. So for example, Paris, Milan, Rome. So Italy and France are the two biggest tax-free shopping countries worldwide, and they've historically been that way. Why? Because that's where the home of fashion is. That's where the brands all are. And also the VAT rates are higher, right? So you're looking at sort of 21, 22% VAT rates in that European region, followed by Spain and Germany. The UAE, I think, has had taken a very proactive view on tourism, has really built a very strong retail infrastructure. You know, I'm sure that many of the listeners who either live in the UAE or have visited have definitely visited, say, the Galleria Mall in Abu Dhabi, which is actually one our launch partner when we just started operations in the UAE this past week, or Dubai Mall, etc. So the UAE is starting to become a very strong hotbed for shopping. Singapore has always, of course, been there. I think, you know, we've all been down Orchard Road. We've seen the great infrastructure over here. So you do have your staples, and then you have sort of, you know, every couple of years, new countries that come up and are able to showcase what they can do in terms of the tax-free system as well. But I would say our staples are that corridor. So we do want to enter France eventually, but Italy is really like where we have a team. I'm heading there tomorrow, actually. UAE, Singapore, and Thailand.
Yeah. What's interesting, of course, is that how does somebody realize that this is an option? Is it primarily discovery at a retailer?
Yeah, there's two ways. So one is our airline partners have been incredibly helpful. You know, I was very pleased that some of my colleagues from one of my alumni groups that I'm a part of showed me, you know, one of them was like, hey, you know, I can see your collaboration with Singapore Airlines on the SQ website. And that was really heartening to see. So our airline partners really do help a lot in terms of getting the message out. But I do think at the end of the day, what's interesting about our industry is every day is a new tourist. You know, it's not like ride hailing or food delivery where you're ordering from the same apps every day. You're maybe using our app once, twice, three times tops per year, because people, that's how much people generally travel, right? So every day for us is a new tourist. So the challenge that we have as a company is how do we realize that Monday's tourist is very different from Tuesday's tourist? Right. So we actually really rely on our retail partners to push that in-store experience, because it's in their benefit as a brand for sure to increase their sales and make that additional sale they were not making before. But also it's a great education point. That of course always presents challenges because brands have curated their retail experience. If you look at some of the bigger groups, they invested millions of dollars, euros into curating what happens when you walk into one of their maisons or their houses, right? So it is always a challenge to discuss with the brands as to how we integrate, but many of them do see the value in terms of what the technology can bring.
Yeah, because it's free money in that sense that they're giving back to the consumer. It's a nice way to basically
recapture that for an extra sale.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Lower price point is one crass way of saying it, but the other way of saying it is like, yeah, you can drive the sale as well. I guess the question then gets straight to it is like, what are some myths or misconceptions about this whole process, the value-added tax refund process and processes? Any myths or misconceptions about this industry?
Yeah, I think a lot of people complain about the fee structure, but it is extremely technical. And I can totally understand that the difficulties that the VAT refund operators are facing in terms of increasing fees. So that's one thing. They have a lot of constituents to deal with. On the U2 side, I think the message that I had always wanted to give out and what we're going to start to put out in our press releases and the interviews that we're going to be giving and stuff is to really say that, look, when you think about tax-free shopping, people only think about the refund operators, right? And I think the message for us is we are not a refund operator. We are really sitting over and above the refund infrastructure. So let them do what they do. We do what we do, which is to give back more and drive those extra sales and benefits for the ecosystem. And I guess it's been a hard message to get across because there's been little innovation in this industry. So whenever I can, I'm always banging that drum to say, no, we're not the refund operator. Don't ask me about that because I'm in a totally different business model to them.
Yeah. When we think about this, obviously you recently raised 33 million Series B. What does the future hold in terms of like your product roadmap and what you want to build?
So I think we've been really lucky as part of that raise to acquire a company called CardsPal, which is quite a well-loved app in Singapore. And what it does is it kind of gives a comparison of different cards and how you should use those payment cards to maximize your rewards. So that was definitely the synergy. So going forward, there's going to be two strategies. One is we're relaunching CardsPal within the coming weeks with a brand new identity, a brand new product offering for domestic rewards. And we're going to start this in Thailand. So we're really excited about that. And we see U2 as sort of being that cross-border, you know, travel app in the tax-free space that gives you incrementally more rewarding experience and value for your tax-free shopping purchases. So we have a domestic strategy and we have a cross-border strategy. We are looking at things like artificial intelligence. I think almost every company is and should be looking at it. However, we're very clear that we are not an AI company. I think that's really important because I think too many people, or what I can see is that there is a little bit of creep into our entrepreneurship ecosystem where too many people are like, you know, throwing the baby out of the bathwater and being like, hey, you know, like guys, no, now we're an AI company. And I think that could be dangerous for the long run. But I think it's a question of saying, how do we use tools like AI in a responsible manner, right? To infuse within our products to make those drop-off points or the customer journey a little bit more frictionless, which is something you've alluded to earlier in our discussion. So we are going to be releasing tools that are AI related, not generative AI, but looking more at things like OCR, enhanced OCR capabilities. And then I think finally, you know, Jeremy, it's really about saying that where I think AI is going is eventually your Google Gemini or your ChatGPT are going to be personal to you, right? A bit like Jarvis in Iron Man, right? I think that's where we're headed to eventually. I think, you know, the leaders in the AI space have alluded to this. So we're saying on our side, how can we use this in a responsible way to serve up the type of value or rewards that work for you? You know, if I know you're flying Singapore Airlines a lot or Emirates or Etihad, can I serve you up the right sort of rewards that cater to that lifestyle? Or perhaps your partner might be a shopaholic and love shopping and likes to buy a certain category of items. Can I start to understand those buying patterns? And when they're in Milan or whether they're in, you know, Thailand, give them options for rewards through YouTube privileges that work for them. So one is the enhanced OCR, which is going to come out in April with a really exciting merchant. And the second one is driving personal experiences. It's going to take time. And we're sort of at the beginning of those, of this AI movement, but we are looking at that quite seriously. At the end of the day, travel for me is still a very in-person experience that delights, right? It's about getting a bum in a seat, traveling to a country, standing in front of an amazing monument, you know, like the Eiffel Tower or the Colosseum. Nothing can take away that. No matter what kind of technology you implement, nothing can take away from that wonder and excitement. So in our space, it's really about saying these tools exist, but how can we use them in a responsible way without taking away that concept of delight and wonder?
Could you share about a time that you personally have been brave?
Yeah, I think this was a very personal one over the pandemic. I mean, we had started actually, we launched our first product in the tax-free space in November 2019, right? It's like super good timing. But obviously like nobody could see what was around the corner, and we did some incredible revenue in like the 6 weeks that we were alive, and then the world just shut down. I think, you know, and I haven't spoken about this publicly, but something that we did was we actually had raised a little bit of money just before COVID to get the business off the ground and, you know, get awareness, etc. And what we did over COVID was we decided not to let go of any of our staff in any of our offices worldwide. Some staff took a slight pay cut for a few months, but just for a few months. But for 3 years, when planes were not flying, when, you know, countries were still conservative, we essentially used all the money we had raised pre-COVID to keep our staff employed, which caused immense difficulty in raising money after, right? Because people are like, oh, what do you do with this money? Why don't you have any revenues? I'm like, well, planes aren't flying. They're like, we need revenue to invest in you guys. But I think the humanitarian thing was to make sure that our staff in India could have a job the next day. Our staff in Singapore were not going to be able to get jobs in the middle of the pandemic. It wasn't so easy to just pivot out of travel into something else. So I think it was brave to make that decision. It did hurt us tremendously financially. It did hurt us tremendously when we were going to market to try and fundraise again. But I would do it again because I'm still fully convinced it was the right thing to do from a human perspective.
How did you decide on that course of action?
I think it really took my dad and I sitting in the same office behind me. I mean, we were alone when the government had, you know, allowed, you know, pairs to be together, right? Whatever the government regulations were. So we were sitting here and we were saying, how do we take this thing forward? Because we could cut all the staff, keep the money and rehire after. But we really felt that our IP was in our people.
Right.
And our people drive our products. And I could see the difficulties that many of our staff members were facing at home, both from an emotional perspective. You know, some of their partners had lost their jobs, so they were, you know, single income households at that time. So it didn't take long for us to deliberate this out. It was literally like an hours long discussion. We took that course of action. We knew it was going to hurt us at some point, but we thought it was the right thing to do. And I still stand by that.
Did you know how long the pandemic was going to take? Because I think a lot of folks were making that same decision, right? So for some people, cut immediately, some people took longer, some people kept. But I think a big part of it was just like expectation of how long the pandemic would have. And more importantly, you know, the whether travel, for example, or entertainment or hospitality, whatever, will be shut for that period of time. So how did you navigate that, you know, estimation?
So the estimation was something I think very few people could predict truly. And also I think cultures and different types of governance played a part, right? So for example, I spent much of the pandemic in the UAE because I was, you know, I was in a very difficult place as a founder. I needed to be in a place that was open and willing to say like, look, you know, tourism is a big driver for us. We're going to vaccinate and we're opening our doors to the world because of the expo. And I'll always be thankful to the UAE, for example, for being that shining light in a very dark time. And the expo was a life-changing experience for me because I saw the world come back, right? Other countries perhaps took a much more conservative approach. Like, you know, a lot of our customers from China couldn't travel for many years, right? But there was no way to sort of guess how long their government was deciding to keep borders shut. We were also a little bit more conservative in Singapore. America has pretty much been open through the pandemic. So it was really difficult to estimate. And also look, in cross-border, a lot of our customers tend to be Asian shoppers. A lot of them are traveling to Europe. And as long as that corridor remained shut, it was very challenging. And even today, if you look at tourism trends, they've changed tremendously since the pandemic. You know, luxury brands, for example, are not saying anymore come necessarily to Europe to shop. Instead, we'll bring the brands to you. I think Hainan Island saw record sales over the Lunar New Year period. Right. So the nature of tourism, the nature of retail is consistently changing and the sands are moving really fast. And I think it's just a question of being able to scale in a way that you can take advantage of different levels of reopening and comebacks. So it was definitely not easy, but we spent the time thinking a lot about innovation. That's where we came out with the idea of the miles upsize as an example. Yeah. So your 65 euros, you know, becomes, you know, 90 euros in miles. So we spent a lot of time ideating those. I don't think we wasted the time, but it was a very tough period for us. And we had to be very prudent, very brave, a little bit foolhardy, but you know, we came out of it. We're alive. I think that's the main thing, is that we came out of it alive. Many companies in our space had to shut.
Yeah. How did you personally deal with this?
It was extremely difficult. I was going through some personal difficulties at home with family members who were really not well, but who were based overseas. So, you know, it came to a point where their illnesses were pretty critical. My wife and I and my son, who was only a few months old at the time, had to travel because it was a necessity. We had to go through SHN. Then, of course, the emotional hit of running a startup with, you know, so many people that depend on you, but in the middle of a pandemic when nothing was moving, I made that decision then to move to the UAE for 6 months, which I'm very thankful for those 6 months. So it was very difficult. I mean, there were pressures on the personal side and there were pressures on the work side. And I think what I was very blessed to have is a very strong support structure. So my dad, who's my co-founder, was like, look, if you think the right thing is to go to the UAE, if that's going to give you the belief and the determination to continue this journey we're on, go and see what you can do over there. And it was through that journey that got us to the point where we're now working with a Mubadala-backed retail asset called the Galleria Mall. It helped to open the door to the relationship we have with the Middle Eastern Airlines. It's been great to socialize with the VC community in the UAE. So I always have friends from industry. I can, you know, I travel to Dubai a lot now and I can meet them. I can meet people who are moving and changing the face of tourism. So I'm very blessed, but it was incredibly taxing on a lot of different fronts.
Yeah. And you became a dad during the pandemic, right? Which I did as well. So I'm just kind of curious what the experience was like since you had a few month old baby, for example, during this travel.
Wow. Yeah, it was very tough. I mean, if I look at the year 2021, my son was born September 2020. And 2021, because of, you know, some of these family health issues, for example, we had to make a move to Pakistan to visit some of these family members. Then I had to go to the UAE for work, but borders were shut. So I was actually like, my wife and I were shut between different borders for a good like 3 months until we all finally made it to the UAE. And that was really tough because I missed those 2-3 months of my son's growing up. And as you know, like when, you know, the kids are a few months old, that's where you sort of see those, you know, huge jumps in incremental jumps in their development. And just the emotional side, being away from my wife and stuff like that, was a really tough thing to do. We spent 2021 between Singapore, Pakistan, Ireland, the US, and finally settled in the UAE for the rest of the year. We lived like nomads. I mean, I'll never forget, like we had an apartment in Dubai that we furnished with $1,000 of IKEA furniture for like 6 months because we didn't know when we were coming back to Singapore when borders were going to open. I mean, it was exciting and it's thrilling. And like, I can smile about it now and look back on it as a very fun time that, you know, I was able to be with my family and we had this great adventure. Through that time, it was really tough, right? Also, at the same time, my wife at that time wasn't working. She had still going through her maternity leave and stuff. So you do feel that extra pressure of being, you know, a single income household, but not having a permanent place to live. I don't know if you had a similar experience or whether it was a big difficulty for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of similarities there. I mean, thankfully, we managed to still be hunkered down in the same home, right, together. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was also quite a difficult time as well. I did catch COVID kind of like at the hospital from the second kid. And so I had to miss like the first month of my kid's life, because I was like quarantining myself away from the kid, which kind of sucked as well. On that note, thank you so much, Amir, for sharing your journey. I thought it was really inspiring to hear three major themes. The first, of course, thank you so much for explaining the, you know, kind of like VAT, the tax refund structure, the processing industry, about how, for example, on average of $100 or refund of a $500 product, you get about $65 back, and what goes in the industry and why it's complicated and why the various players and stakeholders are busy coordinating to make that happen. Secondly, thank you so much for sharing about how you are tackling both in many ways the value of what you're able to get, but also I think realistic about what we can do to structure or restructure the convenience side of it as well. And it was fascinating to hear about your strategy to work with your distribution partners, retail, and work with the current players in the industry across multiple geographies and corridors. Lastly, thanks so much for sharing about your pandemic decisions. I think on the professional front, about deciding to retain your staff and take on the eventually high cost financially, but also on the fundraising side in terms of the revenue attraction. And also conversely, also sharing about your personal struggles and how you overcame those challenges by having a family and making some decisions about your own personal life as well. On that note, thank you so much, Amir, for sharing your journey.
Thanks, Jeremy, and thanks to everybody who's listening.
Thank you for listening to Brave. If you enjoyed this episode, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. We would also appreciate you leaving a rating or review. Head over to www.bravesea.com for member content, resources, and community. Stay well and stay brave.